But you know what? This is a video game podcast. Yeah.
Future from the Timeless Stone. This is the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 8-7. I am your host for this week, the Blue Prism Ranger, Blue Swim. And joining me, as always, is Robert Desert Eagle Allen.
Hey, y'all. Edgemaster is here.
Woo!
And joining us as well is Sage Samurage, Morris Green.
Rock the Hawk, because it's October.
And by our powers combined, this is Captain Kirkland, Sean Nola Kirkland.
My dad used to be a Captain Kirkland.
Why do you get to be Captain Kirkland?
He used to be Colonel Kirkland.
He retired as Colonel Kirkland.
Oh.
So there you go.
Wow.
But no, are we still talking about Soul Calibur? Because I actually have a Soul Calibur story real quick.
Go, Siegfried. Yes.
When I was in New Orleans, Soul Calibur 2 had either just come out or was about to come out. And I went to my first ever video game sort of convention trade showy thing. I can't remember what it was called, but it was like this traveling show of games that are about to come out. So like it was the first Call of Duty was there, Bridget was there, and they were having a Soul Calibur tournament.
Bridget?
And it was Soul Calibur 2 for Xbox, the Xbox version. It had Spawn in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner of the tournament, which they just randomly picked folks out of the crowd for, won the actual Soul Calibur, the evil one that had, like, the big wings and stuff.
And the eye.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so I go up there, and, you know, they just randomly picked us out. And I was really good at the first Soul Calibur with Huang.
Yeah.
Who isn't in Soul Calibur 2. They replaced him with Assassin. And the way they had it set up is that you would go up to a system, and then it would they would pick the character for you, and it was like each person had the same character. So I don't remember who I got the first time, first round, but I won. Second round, I got Maxie, and I won. And then the finals, so I made it all the way to the end. I got, we got Spawn, you know, because that was a big reveal, was that Spawn was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy's interviewing us for the finals, like, oh, so you play a lot of Soul Calibur 1? Yeah, I was like, yeah, I played a lot on the Dreamcast, you know, I really liked it, blah, blah, blah. I really like Spawn, this is really exciting, whatever. And the guy next to me is like, I just came here with my son, and I never played this game before in my life. And so we're playing, and I kicked his ass the first round. But they, like, since it's the finals, you know, they've got the announcer, and he's, like, getting the crowd all riled up. And round two starts, and I'm all excited. You know, I'm going to win this big-ass fucking sword. And the announcer's just in my face, because he's got to make it a show. Otherwise, you know, the people
the
aren't getting what they paid for.
It.
Yeah, so he's, like, literally in my face interfering, and I lose that round. And then the third round, I'm, like, so nervous. I'm shaking. I literally cannot hold on to the controller. And I just bombed. And it was so sad. And the guy's like, I don't really have a place for a sword in my apartment. And the guy's like, that's okay. Here's a free copy of the game. And he's like, I don't have an Xbox, but I can sell this. And that was it. And I was like, nobody gets the sword now. And I'm sad.
That's terrible. But
that was my Soul Calibur story.
It was a good story.
Wow. And this is how
Soul Calibur 2.
Hmm?
Spawn was badass in Soul Calibur.
He was. I think he was a much better character as far as just stripped down characters. I think he was the best of the special characters. I thought he's better than Link, which I know isn't the popular.
I agree.
I thought he felt a lot better.
He fit much better, and his combat flow style was more, I think, organic to Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
And Yoda's, I mean, as hilarious as it is to be Yoda and run around kicking a lot of ass, it's kind of a dumb thing to have, because he's, like, not size or speed matched to really fight with anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vader looked like he would be pretty good to play as. I had the 360 version when that came out, so I got stuck with Yoda. And but yeah, Vader looked like he probably would have been pretty badass to play as.
He was really slow, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't like 4 overall for whatever reason. I know that I don't know why, but 2 was the last time I really enjoyed Soul Calibur.
4 didn't have anything to do, really.
It had that
a mission tower or something like that, but there wasn't anything substantial to it. There was nothing to really keep your attention for an extended amount of time.
Say the pinnacle of Soul Calibur modes was, and most people never played this, was Conquest mode in the arcade version of Soul Calibur 2.
Right.
Because what it did was you set up an account on that machine, and it randomly assigned you to one of 3 factions, and then you saw a map. And you would pick an area on the map, and you would go there, and you would find somebody else who had played the game, and you would fight whichever their preferred character is, and it would level that character up, so they'd be more difficult depending on how much that person played, or how many fights that they had won even when they were gone. And so you would be trying to take all these territories, and then meanwhile, you know, eventually you run out of quarters and leave, somebody else would come and play, and they would take over territories. And so it was this kind of never-ending battle between these 3 factions. And it was just really cool. You'd go there, like, every day, see how your faction's doing. Eventually, the one I played at was at this train station in New Orleans. But eventually, somebody came and they took over pretty much the entire map. And, like, you can't lose-lose, so every time you come and log in, it'll just put you all the way in one corner of the map, and you have this overwhelming space that you can go after. But, I don't know, it was a really cool mode. And you'll kind of never see that again because it doesn't really work the same online.
I thought they did okay with it when they what was it? Was it the 3rd one they put it in?
Yeah, they had something that was similar to what you were describing.
I thought they had bowling.
No.
Didn't they have bowling in the 3rd one?
No.
No?
It's Tekken. You think Tekken?
Oh, Tekken. What?
No, I think they.
What game were we talking about again?
I know Soul Calibur. I don't know how well it played on the 360 compared to the arcade, but it was really. I thought it was pretty good on the.
PS2.
On the 360, I think it was.
No, Soul Calibur 3 was, I think, PS2 exclusive.
No way! Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soul Calibur 4 was the first one on the 360. Well, I guess it had the original Soul Calibur, but didn't have a mission mode from the Dreamcast version.
That makes sense. I know, but 5's coming out soon, apparently.
I was watching a live stream of that about a week or two ago, and that looks really good.
Really? I thought it looked crap.
Really?
Yeah.
Totally. Soul Calibur, you can't really watch and get a feel for, I don't feel like. I feel like until you get your hands on it, you know, you don't know. It's such a mixed bag between Soul Edge and then Soul Calibur and Soul Calibur 2 and Soul Calibur 3. Like, they're such incredibly different games.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, but I feel like it's too, like, samey now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like they've made it too commercial, and it doesn't look... I don't know. Other years when I've seen a new Soul Calibur coming out, I've always thought it looked pretty awesome, but this time around I feel like it doesn't really look that good.
I don't know.
But we'll see.
Well, we are way off on a tangent. We haven't even started the show yet.
Yes, we have. We're talking about Soul Calibur and how it's awesome and everybody should play it.
And I'm talking about Tekken.
we still had one more introduction piece.
Do we?
Host.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday, I guess yesterday is when we're recording this. I was in the parking lot of Walmart. And I got an alert on my phone, and I saw that Steve Jobs had passed away. And I mean, I knew that he wasn't in great health because he turned over the reins of Apple over to somebody else. I don't pay attention to Apple too much, but you know, when I really didn't expect him to be dead, you know. I didn't expect this to happen. I know he hadn't been in great health, you know, for the last couple of years, but I really didn't expect to expect this to happen. I was stunned and shocked and saddened to hear about it.
I think it would be appropriate to have a little moment of silence for him, considering how many people he affected with, you know, his technology. I mean, I don't love everything Apple, but Steve Jobs was a really visionary guy, and I know that there are a lot of people in my life who are actually, like, significantly, really sincerely upset that he's passed away.
Yeah, he advanced more than just technology. He advanced mankind.
Totally.
Measurably. And one thing I didn't know was that he was, I guess, a co-founder of Pixar, the animation studio behind Toy Story. And Toy Story is like one of my favorite movies ever.
Yep.
So, yeah, let's give Steve Jobs a moment of silence. Okay, so Sage, why don't you start us off this week?
I didn't get to talk about my conspiracy theory.
What is your conspiracy theory?
Yeah, we got to hear Sean here.
Yeah, okay.
I think Steve Jobs has been dead for at least a week.
Why do you think that?
Wait a minute.
I think, well, okay, so he's been
putting on my tinfoil hat. I'm putting on my tinfoil hat.
Okay. He's been in bad health for a while now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got diagnosed with cancer. He refused treatment, got really sick, got treatment forced on him. Then it was how many weeks ago that he stepped down as CEO?
Mm-hmm.
So it was, what, about 6 weeks or a month or something? Or 2 months, something like that? John.
And then he's conveniently announced dead right after the iPhone 4S launch. Now, one thing Steve Jobs was not is stupid, and he was not irresponsible, and he knows that his death would directly be tied into the stock prices and the employment of thousands of Apple employees, right? You know, Steve Jobs dies, stocks take a tank.
Mm-hmm.
That affects a lot of people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he, told whatever powers it be, no matter when I die, wait until after you announce the new iPhone to do it so that stocks will stabilize. And I think it was a smart move. I think not only will it stabilize, I think it's actually going to be a boon for the company. I mean, not the boon for the company is, oh my God, they lost Steve Jobs, it's so great. I mean, a boon for the company in the short term of there's a price spike when the iPhone got announced. There'll be another spike when it launches. And I don't think that his death's going to affect it that much, just because coming right out of that goodwill from the announcement, I think it's just going to garner more goodwill. It's going to remind people why they liked him in the first place, and it's going to garner more goodwill towards the company. So, I mean, it was kind of his last. If my conspiracy theory is right, it's kind of his last really smart thing.
I could see it. I mean, I don't know that I agree with you, but I can see your logic in that. I can't believe he's dead because he's always been, like, so present in so many things. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, like I said, not my favorite company just because I don't love all their products, but I don't dislike the company at all. But he just was always in, like, you know, different shows about things and different montages to himself. I mean, I don't know. Just overall, it seems kind of crazy, you know? I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway.
Pour one out for my Jobs, homies.
Yep.
Totally. All right, so now let's get into the regular meat of the show.
Meat.
Sage, would you care to start us off for what you've been playing this week?
Would I care to? I can. I have had a very trying week, sadly. So, it's been crazy. And I didn't even realize, for the record, that Hawktober was a thing until Sean sent me that thing.
I didn't realize it either until I saw it.
Right?
Anything that rhymes with Ock is a Tober. There's also Glocktober, which I tried to send to Deagle. For whatever reason, the link wouldn't work.
That's funny.
I'll celebrate.
Glocktober. Everyone, take your Glock outside and shoot it up.
What other things rhyme Papa with Ock?
Cat.
Killer Croctober.
Killer Croc. Nice. It's huge. Yeah, anyway.
Back on topic. Video games.
Video games. I have been playing more Kirby, which I just want to bring up because I wanted to let everybody know that it is, in fact, only getting better and better. I continue to be really impressed with it as a game. Because it's like the difficulty is definitely going up and on a nice sort of incline. So as I've gotten to different stages, they have gotten like increasingly more difficult and increasingly more interesting. Like the basics start stacking on themselves, which is normal, but then you get level types that are really pretty diverse, which I appreciate because it doesn't happen all the time. Like there's one level where you are riding in a big basket with these balloons, and on the bottom screen you have the basket that you're in, and on the top screen it shows your balloon in proportion to the rest of the, or in relation to the rest of the sky. And so where you make the Kirby's run in the basket controls which direction the balloon goes, and so you try to avoid like bad guys and get certain things. And it was like a wonderful little thing to come upon because it, none of the level types had been anything like that. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, here you go.
Balloon ride,
which is apropos because it is the balloon festival. It is the balloon festival here in festival? New Mexico right now.
Are they playing Noin and Noin Loof Balloons?
No.
Germanism.
But anyway, it's cool because I was driving to Albuquerque the other day from Santa Fe, and all of a sudden, like, it was something out of like a Terry Gilliam movie, because all of a sudden there were just balloons everywhere in the sky, and I like look over to the cityscape next to me and there's balloons coming out of the city, and it was just magical.
Hot air balloons.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you say hot air? Because I just thought you were talking about balloons.
I said the balloon festival, but I figured most people know what that is because it's like a countrywide known event.
Yeah, I'm just an idiot.
Well, you I didn't know that was an event, but I do know what the New Mexico license plates look like, and they have hot air balloons on them, so that's where I made my assumption.
It's one of the big polls, I guess, for New Mexico.
That they're from hot air?
One of the many.
Yes to both of you. So anyway, I've been playing more of that. I just wanted to mention it because it, as I said, not all games do continue to get better and better, but this one definitely is. Solitarobo is so far still the same, but I haven't gotten to play a whole ton of it. I actually wanted to do sort of a comparison, though, between just in the honor of RPGs and in honor of the... I don't know if any of you remember, but I used to do comparisons between games when I first started on Tech Gaming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I thought... Sean, do you not like this idea?
No, I just... Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember.
So I thought it'd be interesting just to look... Because I know that... I don't know if you... Have you guys gotten to play Solitarobo yet?
Sadly, no.
Oh. Well, maybe I'll save this. I'll key you into what I'm looking at, though, because I want to look at, and I think it'd be cool if we all talked about it, I want to look at the difference between Solitarobo, which is sort of the now RPG, and Grandia 2, which is, in my opinion, arguably one of the best RPGs. And I want to look at the music and the mechanics and the men, for lack of a better word, just in terms of like characters that you can play. So the three M's.
Aren't there dogs?
In
Solitarobo?
M being manipulatable characters. How about
okay.
that?
Okay.
Ah. So we're gonna. So for next time, whenever you guys have played Solitarobo, I want to talk about that. The three M's of Sola versus Grandia. So yes.
Bring your M&Ms.
Your M&Ms. Just... Bring your M&Ms for that discussion. It will be rip roaring good fun. And
they better be crispy M&Ms. Not the plain ones, the good ones, the crispy.
Crispy M&Ms are good. Do you know some woman bit down on an M&M so hard it was a peanut M&M and it was missing the peanut? And this woman is a moron, speaking of morons, and she bit down so hard she broke her own tooth and then wanted to sue M&Ms for not having a peanut in the M&M. And, like, I'm sure she won. I don't remember how the case turned out, but if it were me and I were the judge, I would look at that woman and be like, bitch, you bit down so hard you broke yourself. You have no one to blame but you.
She must have been really fucking hungry.
That's what Stella Awards are for.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I bought Demon Dark Souls. I bought Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I'm really distracted. Did you?
I'm fucking obsessed with the first one.
I have not really gotten to play it yet. I've gotten to play Okay, good. So we'll both talk about that next time. But I bought it, and I'm super excited, and I'm going to play it for next time.
Very cool.
It's difficult.
I've heard. I heard it's even harder than the first one.
Here's what I'm worried about. So when the first one, when I reviewed that, nobody knew anything about it, and then it kind of got this rap for being super difficult. When it's not that it's any more difficult than any other game, it's that every fight you get into, you have to concentrate on. You're not just going to breeze through a crowd of enemies. You know, every fight you get into is a fight. And you don't see a lot of games like that. So it's not so much that it's hard that it's challenging. Mm-hmm. What I'm worried about is that it's so hard got played up. There's going to be a lot of cheap deaths in this one. Because that's all I've heard about it so far. Oh my god, it's so hard. I'm so hardcore for in this game. I'm so hard. Mm. And that's, I'm concerned. But we'll see when I actually get around to opening it.
I heard
IGN reviews say that it was even harder than the first one.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that.
At one point, there's a two-hour checkpoint. There's a two-hour duration between checkpoints.
Oh, well, that depends on how you play the game, though, because Demon's Souls had a lot of points like that, too. Mm. But from what I understand, this one's more of an open world, and there is space between the checkpoints as opposed to Demon's Souls, which was each level was broken into three parts, and then you could unlock shortcuts to get in between those three parts. Mm-hmm. So even though it was technically several hours between checkpoints, once you open certain doors, they stayed open. So you could, cut a big chunk of it out.
Right.
So I don't know how this one's going to deal with that, but we'll see. Like I said, I haven't gotten to break the seal on it because I've been super busy this week. But hopefully
and it doesn't have any quick saves.
No, it's this the whole idea. So the whole idea of the first one was you die, you go back to the hub world, you start the level over again. Everything's as it was, except for a couple of events that you can affect that are permanent. So certain doors that open and things like that. So the best example I can think of off the top of my head is the first level. You start it up and there's a giant door in front of you, and then you take a left because you can't go through that giant door. And eventually you get to a point where you open that door, and then it's open forever. So you never have to go left again if you don't want to. Things like that. It's actually really, really good mechanic, in my opinion. But that's my
opinion. Right. No, I think it is a good mechanic, and I like that it's a game that's less forgiving than other games are right now in a world where all games have sort of become stupid, stupid, stupid. It's still a little bit challenging.
But yeah, like I said.
Do we have to go there, talking about games being stupid?
Today is the stupid cast, apparently.
You guys are putting me in hot water for that one.
Yeah.
Anything else, Sage?
I feel like I played a free online game, but I can't remember. Oh, I got Angry Birds Seasons on my phone.
Next.
My mom's gotten hooked on Angry Birds as well.
So I have never.
Is there any difference between the variations of Angry Birds besides
just different levels? Like I know the Angry Birds Rio has monkeys and golden bananas and shit. I know this because my girlfriend's dad is obsessed with it now. And he's like, I've three-starred everything, but now I gotta go find those golden bananas. And I'm like,
I like
this is the same man who lectures me. He lectures me all the time about how, my kids grew up right because I didn't let them play video games all the time. And I'm like, here you are sitting in the backyard. You cannot take your phone out of your hand because you're playing so much Angry Birds.
So wait, how does he feel about the fact that you work for a video game podcast, if that's what he thinks?
He likes it. He keeps telling me that I need to figure out a way that I can work in the industry and actually make money at it. But he thinks it's cool.
That's good.
But he still thinks that even though it doesn't affect me, all the world's ills are because parents let their kids play too much video games.
I think that's bogus. But anyway, I checked it out because Seasons is free, which I thought was a better deal because it's a billion levels all with different themes, which are adorable. And it was free.
Aren't all of them free but ad-supported, and then you can buy a paid
I thought the regular one cost, when I went to try and download, because I wanted to get the regular one to see what all the fuss was about, and I couldn't, it said it costed the monies.
The regular one, from what I understand, they have a free version, but it's not always available. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they do that, though.
Right? That's what I think is weird.
The pigs are behind it.
I'm the piggies. Anyway, I still
is
don't
that
really
commentary
see...
on Police State?
Yes.
What?
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
I still don't really see what all the fuss is about, having now given it a little bit of a try. I mean, it's great for killing time when you have a boring class, but other than that, I don't really understand why people are so into it, because it's pretty, I mean, I don't really get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Well, it's got a catchy theme and good art style, and it's got good production value for an iPhone game, and it is addictive, and it's quick. You can just pull it out, play a level, and put it away. I mean, that is the whole thing. It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that to make it as big as it is. It's on something that everybody has, and it's free.
Word.
But anyway, we Rob said next, like, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Angry Birds? Are we really talking about Angry Birds? Tell me that was a bad dream. Wake me up. Watch me. Okay.
Let me give another anecdote. That was a segue.
Okay.
So I finished. Are you
passing the torch?
Well, I guess it's technically Blue's thing to pass.
Anyway, John, yes, I'm done.
You want to take it? I've seen what Deagle's going to talk about, and I'm still working on my questions for him.
Okay.
Right.
So first, I just wanted to talk about I got to the end of Valkyria Chronicles 2, and I reviewed that like a gajillion years ago, and I'd forgotten that late in the game, and this isn't really a spoiler. There's a swimming pool scene, and it's pretty much just it's the longest FMV in the game, and it's pretty much just, look at all these boobies, and look at them jiggle. Jiggle, jiggle, boobies. Oh, her top's gone. She's going to have to cover that up because she got big old boobies that don't fit in her bathing suit there. And I was on the bus.
Rubberneck.
It was the most uncomfortable thing in my life, especially because I had to leave work late, so I couldn't catch the commuter bus. I caught like the regular 7:33, so they were like, tons of people on the bus. I'm like shoulder to shoulder with folks. I'm like, yep, look at all these jiggly boobies on my PSP screen. I'm totally a perv. And that was not fun. But no, that game's still good. The other game that I played that is not good is White Knight Chronicles Origins, which is the PSP White Knight Chronicles game that did not get released over here, but got released in English in Europe. So I imported that. And man, is it not good. So it's got the same battle system as White Knight Chronicles, which I know you're not a fan of, but I think it's all right. Mm-hmm. And I had said before that I think it would fit on a portable system. But what they took out was the active time bar, or the active time circle. So now it's just when the animation's done, you're ready to go again. And changing from weapon to weapon, that's not really always that clear. And you're also, especially when you're using a smaller weapon like a short sword, it really just feels like you're button mashing.
So there's no tell indicating that it's your turn to swing. Oh, yeah, that sounds horrible.
And it's pretty ugly. It's mission-based, so kind of like a Monster Hunter sort of thing. And it's also tile-based. So you're not in these planned environments. It's sort of just a random generated batch of rooms, which I know is really popular for PSP design, and I don't think that's a good trend. I don't think we should support that. But I don't know. It's weird. It's also weird because in the first scene, they establish that the White Knight is actually the bad guy in this one.
What?
And then you get this magical power that doesn't turn you into an Incorruptus, but it turns you and all your teammates into, like, Knight Power Ranger kind of things, which is kind of cool, I guess. I guess it's the coolest part of the game. And then you play through, I think I got through 16 missions before I ever got to another story part. 16 missions, each one up to an hour long.
Ooh.
But luckily, most of them you can actually beat in, like, 10 minutes if you just plow through them. But yeah, I got through 16 missions before I actually got to another story part, and it wasn't even like, here's a bunch of story, it's, hey, here's a character from the first scene, alright, he's gonna send you on another mission, and there's a boss at the end of this one, alright, do some more missions. And it was, I don't know, it was not good. I was not happy with it.
How much did you pay for that?
$40.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm hoping that since it never got released here, because I do think there's going to be a PSP collector's market. I think that's going to be one of the last really collectible systems, and I think there's going to be a UMD market someday. So I think that that and my boxed set of Mega Man Legends is going to...
Fetch a box set of Mega Man Legends?
Yeah, in Japan they released Mega Man Legends 1 and 2 on UMD, and you could actually buy it as a box set. Comes in a nice little DVD box.
Oh boy, that's going to get a decent chunk of change, I'm thinking. I saw Legends 2 at a secondhand store for $90, I want to say.
What? Legends 2 is not worth $90. They are ripping people off. That's a good game, though, but I'm saying you can probably get it for like $50. I have that game. I like that game. But yeah, there was something else I wanted to say about it, but I can't remember. Don't buy it.
You're banking on that one day you'll make your money back.
Pretty much. Well, yeah, like I said, I don't think I'm going to make money off of it, but I think it'll hold its value at least. Somewhere down the line, I'll be able to.
You know what I want to say, speaking of not worth it and people charging too much and being ridiculous?
The movies.
No.
Angry Birds.
No. It was free. That's totally worth it. Exactly. No, fucking GameStop. I thought about this the other day and it kind of enraged me, and someone had brought up something about not liking GameStop for different reasons, because they don't like that they sell used games, which I think is fine, whatever, but they gave me a hard time when I called in to see if they had Dark Souls, and they were like, why didn't you pre-order? Because we don't have any left, and then you would have one. And I was like, because I have a life essay, I can't just call you every time a game comes out. And they were like, oh, I guess you should have pre-ordered. And they continued to give me shit on the phone. I was like, do you want me never to come in and buy a game from you ever again? Because I could do that.
Oh, their corporate training is apparently pretty
rigorous.
Brutal. Yeah, they have to do that.
Well, I don't care. It's still lame.
No, it is lame. I think it's more lame that they have to do that. Because I remember when my company, my old company that I used to work for, made us start doing crap like that. And I was not cool about it. Because we only sold used games. We did not sell any new product. And somebody would come and be like, I want to buy Super Mario Duck Hunt for 50 cents. And I'd be like, all right, do you want to buy an extended warranty for that?
Oh, God, don't you just love those awkward pauses, like when they ask you if you want the extended warranty on anything?
You want a $5 extended warranty on that 50-cent NES cartridge? Replace it for free for up to 3 years.
But there's a difference between asking and then giving someone a bunch of shit because they're like, well, I didn't. You know what I mean? This guy, like, wouldn't let up. He was like, I guess you should do it, and just kept saying it. And I was like, okay, I hear what you're saying. Shut the fuck up.
You know, we can't knock GameStop's trading too badly. They did manage to talk me into getting one of those free version of their reward cards, power-up reward things. And they managed to do it just by telling me it was free and shiny.
That's more a discredit to you than a credit to them, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think that really counts that way.
Yeah, I kind of figured.
Yeah.
But other than that, the only other thing I played was Resident Evil Code Veronica X HD Remix. And I bought it for $10 because it was $10 on PlayStation Plus, and I did not realize that there were trophies on the HD versions of those games. Otherwise, I also would have bought Resident Evil 4 when it was $10. But now it's $20, and that seems like a little too much for me.
I have it. You can grab it. Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. I might just do that. You can grab Code Veronica if you'd like.
Oh,
that is that all he can grab?
It's all you can grab for $9.99.
Wow, bow wow.
Oh, gross.
Good times.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I've been playing, so somebody else take it away.
Deagle? Quick.
Did you pre-order my impressions? Sage? Just kidding.
Did I pre-order your impressions?
Are they shiny?
Sage, you should have pre-ordered. He's all out of games that he's played.
Never mind. I was trying to get a rise, but it's not going to happen.
You got a rise out of Sean already.
Yeah. So anyway, this week I got invited, speaking of appendages, to Nintendo's PR arm to check out some of their upcoming releases for both Wii and DS, most of which I am told will be shown at the New York Comic Con, which is this weekend, right? Yeah?
Yes, it is.
Sure. Okay.
Next week sometime.
Okay. So I have to admit, I walked in very neutral about most of the titles, and after having kind of a brief go with most of them, I'm definitely hungry for more. The first thing I played was about 3 or 4 stages in Super Mario 3D Land. And after just a few minutes with the game, I can potentially see why the title didn't ship with the 3DS launch. Here's my conspiracy. Like most of the non-CDI entries in the Mario franchise, it's insanely polished. I mean, it's clear that they've been working on this one for a long time. One of the most beautiful thing about it is when I just picked it up and started playing, and it was totally instinctive. You know, it followed all the Mario rules, from the physics, the action, just everything fell together well. One of the things I noticed is that the game has really, you don't have a need for an extra analog stick. The game's camera is smart enough to follow the action well. Of the levels I played, there's probably a little less freeform running in different directions. And instead, every level, you're generally moving in a specific direction. On the first one, you're kind of moving into the screen, and there's at least one instance of this.
Are you being chased by the gun truck?
No, that would be that blue guy if we won't talk about.
We're not talking about him, but I love him.
You love Sonic? Huh?
I love him.
Not as much as Sektor, I heard. So anyway, there's your shout out, sir. Anyway, on the one level, there's this really nice display of kind of simulated height. Mario jumps down from a platform to the ground below. It looked really good in 3D. Now, throughout most of the levels, there's this interesting gyroscopic integration that happens when you step up to these little green podiums, these observational posts. And what you do is you can take the 3DS and look around the entire level. And the object there is to kind of scour the landscape for a huge coin. I think someone picked it up previously and they didn't reset it. So I didn't quite get the full, you know, understanding of it. But it's released somewhere in the stage, and then you have to go out and find it. But what's nice about it is you can step up, and it's usually at the beginning of the level. You can kind of scope out the level and see what lays ahead. And that really hasn't been done as far as I could tell in a Mario game. Another level had Mario riding on one of these platforms that moved either forward or backward. It had different arrows on it, depending if you were stepping on an arrow pointing to the left or right. It was shown in this isometric perspective, and if I recall correctly, this level concluded with a trip to Bowser's castle, where players saw in the deep background you could see him running, scampering back and forth. And from what the rep insinuated, you could take Bowser out with fireballs, or as I did, the old trick where you run across the bridge, flip the switch, and send him in the lava. You know, the same old tricks are there. The best part about it was just, again, how instinctive, how natural it felt. The rep didn't have to explain anything. It just felt like a Mario game. It didn't feel as wild as, say, Super Mario Galaxy, that planet jump to jump, that really kind of hyper-connect feel. But it was more slow, subdued. But I didn't have a problem with that. The only time where I was kind of mystified was there was this one kind of alcove that one of the reps showed me. I did this Ninja Gaiden wall-to-wall jump. And on top, there was a mushroom, but there were these flat, like Paper Mario type mushrooms aside there. And I kept asking him, I said, oh, is there going to be like a 2D, you know, Paper Mario inspired level? But he wouldn't answer. He wouldn't even answer if Yoshi was in there. He kind of got mad that I would even ask.
Yoshi made Galaxy 2 better than Galaxy 1.
Yeah,
really. Well, that and the fact that they really polished everything even better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to preempt you and play devil's advocate.
Okay.
So what's stood out to me when you're describing that is it feels like a Mario game.
Yes, very much so.
And you also saw, and this is me spoiling the rest of your thing, you also saw Mario Kart 7,
yeah,
Skyward Sword,
mm-hmm,
and Kirby's Return to Dream Land. Mario Kart 7, which we know exactly is a Mario Kart game, Skyward Sword, which is supposed to be a return to form for Zelda, and I don't know much about Kirby, but does it worry you that it seems like they're just being Nintendo and making more of the exact same game?
Type games?
Yeah. I mean okay. we already have a Star Fox game that's Star Fox and a Zelda game that's Zelda for the 3DS.
Star Fox is a remake, and you might be able to call Mario Kart 7 a remake. And, I mean, our worry when we got out at E3, and I think we briefly talked about Mario Kart 7, is that, hey, it looked like Mario Kart with a propeller. And
also got a Tanuki tail now.
On Mario Kart 7?
Yeah, that was the big news today. Did they not show you that?
No, I jumped in the Tanuki suit for the Mario Land 3D. But I did. Yeah,
how was that?
Oh, it's regular Tanuki suit. You can, you know, kind of flutter fly. You can swing your tail, take out flowers. You know, it feels like, you know, it gives you the sense of deja vu that you've kind of played it before, but in 3D. So that's nice. But I think Mario Kart 7 was probably the one which I least enjoyed because of what Sean just touched on, because it wasn't – that series has not evolved. There's still that notion where the mechanics are the same. The cars start ahead of you and you have to catch up. The one thing I was impressed by was the fluidity of it. Even with the stereoscopic mode on, it felt like it was pushing 60 frames per second. I mean, I could be wrong, but the fluidity was there. The only change in that one was you could, you know, unlock parts. And, you know, I had this Yoshimobile with kind of grippy tires and a sail, which allowed me to float. And the one interesting thing was you could even wreck into, I don't even know what you call it, that banner that is across the lap line. But the underwater level, it just... You know, other than grabbing coins from these giant clams, it just felt like land racing, but with a little bit more gravity. And so I think that is probably, because I'm going to touch on Zelda next, Zelda really felt different, and Zelda was actually hard for me to jump into. As easy as it was for Mario Land 3D to just kind of pick it up and Mario Kart, Zelda was completely different, so I'll kind of jump into that. First of all, it was polished. You know, there was none of the craziness that plagued Miyamoto during, what was that, the E3 2009 yeah. presentation. But there's definitely this commitment to master the controls. So the brief section that they showed me was kind of this micro dungeon. I wouldn't even call it a micro. Consisted of nothing more than kind of the circular area with a structure in the middle. And when I started, first I was attacked by bats, and you can lock on with the Z button, you know, pretty par for the course, and you swing the Wiimote to slice, and it delivered this nice little melodic sequence of tones. So I thought that the spider next, you know, that was approaching me next would be just as easily killed, but I was totally wrong, and I lost about 8 hearts on this sucker. So here's what happened. Zelda's enemies now have been given this punch out like system where the spiders, all the different monsters have, you have to learn and exploit their weakness. I guess it's Monster Hunter for the younger set. So with this spider, I had to flip him over with an uppercut, which I didn't even know you could do. And then there was this Mad World style. You take 2 hands and impale his belly. but I didn't quite manage to do this before he wrapped me up and he hit me, you know, munched my head a couple times.
This actually sounds like the E3 demo.
Yeah, it may have been. I'm not sure if they showed that, but after that part was over, I took out the Beetle, which is this UAV type contraption that you fly around with the Wiimote, and it feels just like Wii Sports Resort's airplanes, the airplane match that we played, Sean. And mm-hmm. in the sky, there was this kind of pink thing that I collided with, which opened the door to the structure. And then when you get in, there's a skeleton who, of course, just like everything else, he delivers certain tells, and you block at the right time, and, you know, he lunges at you. And after about 5 minutes of dodging and hitting, he finally fell and delivered, you know, a treasure chest. And then you have to use the Beetle to get your way out. And then outside, I used a bow, which directly brings Wii Sports archery mechanic to the game, and that you shoot another, you know, I shot another spider down, and this time I was able to kind of pick him off from a safe distance. But the only problem with this was kind of adapting to so many different control schemes in this kind of snapshot of a demo. Obviously, it's not the beginning of a game. It's somewhere in there, and you probably have time to get accustomed to each of these. You know, it kind of builds. But one of the things was the minus, both the minus and the B buttons brought up these radial style menus full of equipment, and things like shaking the Wiimote or the nunchuck would bring up your sword or your shield. And it doesn't sound like much, but in the heat of the battle, and I'm pretty sure the game doesn't pause when you're fiddling around with your inventory, it can be a little bit much. You know, you get the spider attacking you, and he's, you know, got you in a headlock, and he's eating your head, and you're like, oh, what the hell am I going to do? And, you know, you grab a potion, then you got to hit the right button to swallow the potion, and sometimes I mix up the C and Z, and shit, all hell was breaking loose with Zelda. So one of the things about Zelda is I know that people were asking for these kind of mechanics when the first when Twilight Princess, you know, came out and the Wii first hit stores. But I think it's almost built around all the different mechanics that people have learned within the system's lifetime, you know, the archery, the flying, all the different things. And so it feels, and I'm trying to imagine, you know, I first played Zelda, I was pretty young, and it was just, you know, considerably simple, but I'm trying to imagine how as kids they'll pick it up and could jump right in and kind of master so many different things at once, because it doesn't feel like any Zelda before, because you have so much to do and there's so many different mechanics there.
I wonder if it's going to be really divisive.
It's good. It's very good for what it is. And like I said, maybe if they ease into it and show you, and, you know, you master one thing before moving on to another, but jumping right into it, it felt difficult to me.
Well, I'm just saying Zelda fans don't like it when you make a change. Zelda game that isn't Ocarina of Time.
Right. I guess it could be. So I asked, you know, if the old bombs and the boomerang and all that were going to be in there, and I think I got the affirmative to that. So that one is definitely, I think, a big change for Nintendo, unlike the other ones where you might have par for the course.
What did you think of the graphics? Because it's kind of using like a quasi cell shaded look.
I didn't really notice the cell shading per se. Spending most of my time on next gen consoles, the figures, the characters themselves didn't look that hot. The environments look good, but I didn't think the character modeling was that good. There was another, and I'll briefly mention, there was another segment where you're catching a bird. And I guess it's at the very beginning of the game. It's like a test of manhood, you know, for the protagonist. And so you have a bunch of characters. And again, you're using the Wiimote to almost, I think you're flying on something. I don't know, some dragon or bird or something. You're trying to catch up with this other one. And I don't know, just the design of the characters didn't impress me. And in that section, there was more of a in-game cinematics. And I don't know. It's probably the best the Wii can do, but coming off, you know, some next-gen titles, wasn't that impressive.
Did you say it's the best that Wii can do?
Yes, you like that? That will be the name of the show, the best that Wii can do, W-I-I.
I like it. But I think Wii can do better, and that they will. Just give them time.
No,
Nintendo can do better, but the Wii itself.
Yeah, they're reaching its graphical limits, I believe, with Zelda.
And that's why you need to upgrade to Wii U, so we can be you.
So, I'll ignore that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and the last game that I saw at Nintendo was Kirby Return to Dream Land, and that was kind of the unexpected highlight of the whole demonstration. It offered a four-player Kirby game, which recalled, what was it, Super Mario Brothers Wii. And although the one thing I liked about the last Wii Kirby game was the fabric aesthetic, that's gone, and it got replaced by this 2.5D rendition of the SNES Dreamland games.
Like Dreamland 3, where it was all...
Yeah. It looks like Dreamland 3, but it has a slightly elevated perspective where, you know, it's a little bit 3D there.
So wait. Kinda just like, so I'm clear, so like colored pencils?
Because
Dreamland 3 was the one that looked like it was hand-drawn.
Oh, no, it doesn't have a hand-drawn.
Okay. Was it crystal shards on the 64?
Yeah, maybe like that. Okay, so right. Maybe my...
There are lots of different Kirby art styles.
I get very confused with all the Kirby
games, I thought, for the SNES, I thought the cinematics had that drawn pencil, aha, squiggly, you know, aha, take on me, kind of squiggly art style. But then the actual levels themselves are pretty straightforward.
No, there's... The Dreamland 3, like, the levels are all that hand-drawn style, too.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah.
No, never mind. If I said that, it doesn't have that.
Can I just say, I don't know how this became a music/video game podcast, but you just referenced Aha Take On Me, which is fucking hilarious.
Because it was in Pump It Up Exceed the premiere.
I'm just saying, this is the...
Also one of my favorite songs to sing on SingStar.
I sing it in the shower all the time. I'm not making fun of the song. I think it's awesome. But also, I think it's... Yeah. It's funny that the last 3 weeks have been like, let's talk about some music also.
Oh, well.
Wait, you might have been right about... Oh, you know, I was right.
He did that whole thing just to
burn.
I was looking at it. It's just weird how my memories of this made it look a lot more scribbly than it actually is. But no, it's in there.
Really? Okay. I did remember it as scribbly, so damn it, I'm right. Anyway, so I got to play the game with two other people, and... To me, it offers the kind of multiplayer experience that I like. We were just kind of playing there in this immersive kind of quiet haze, occasionally talking to address, you know, simple tactics, things like don't touch the star yet or, you know, kill that guy over there. And I'm not sure if Kirby, I don't know, has the star power of Mario, but there's no reason why this shouldn't sell in the same vein as Mario Brothers Wii. You know, it's the same type of game. It's almost feels reskinned with Kirby, but you know, very good, very polished, very fun.
Could you suck in the other Kirbys?
Good. There's different characters. Of course, there's different color Kirbys. I was playing, what's the name of the knight guy?
Oh, Meta Knight.
Meta Knight. I was playing him, and he had some of the abilities from Smash Brothers Wii there.
Did you know that he is apparently unofficial tournaments? For Super Smash Bros. Brawl, Meta Knight has been banned.
Yeah, a lot of characters are banned in Brawl. Like, there's a very specific...
I don't understand why there are Brawl tournaments. Because
there's enough people play it. Yeah, it's not balanced at all.
Right. but anyway, it's totally drop in and drop out. And what you can even do is switch characters. Now, I asked if you're a single player, because you do need to inhale some blocks to pass by certain things. I think when you are a single player, you have to be Kirby. Just so you can, you know, clear the level and get rid of some of those things. So with that, it's time to bring an abrupt end to the merriment and move on to the other title I played this week, which I didn't care for at all. X-Men Destiny.
I was going to get that from Redbox.
Yeah.
And my Redbox was
broken.
I don't know if it's malfunction. No, they had it for 360, but they were out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also listed it for Wii, which I don't think it actually came out for the Wii.
Yeah, it did.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's a good thing I didn't pick it up. Well, I guess I should have played
it. Hold on, let me check. Yeah, you're wrong.
Yes. So it did or did not come out for the Wii?
I didn't check. I'm just fucking with you. So,
he just wanted to be mean to you.
No, I'm almost certain it did.
Okay, well, I didn't want to play it on the Wii.
play it on PS3.
But,
actually, no, don't play it at all.
Don't play it at all as a thing, but I wanted, when I heard that nobody was going to be reviewing it, I wanted to go at least grab it.
As I was playing it, here was my mantra. Would Sean like this game? Probably not. I said to myself, how much do you guys know about Silicon Knights financial breaks? And I mentioned that they're the studio behind the game for the listeners.
Didn't they get like a tax break or something like that for making Two Human as terrible as it is?
I think they, from what, if the reports are to be believed, that they received about $8 million from the Canadian government over the last 3 years or so, which some of it was allegedly earmarked for this game. And I think if that's true, I think the Wall Street protesters should probably make a quick trek to the Great White North. And complain about this. So first, a little context. I'm a game reviewer and not the biggest comic geek. I read the Uncanny X-Men during the late 80s, early 90s, and seen the movies. So my comic background isn't very strong. And Sean would probably get mad if I ask why does Nightcrawler have dreadlocks in this? And he'd tell me,
it's one of the many. See, X-Men aren't my thing. It's one of the many, many redesigns. The other question is, why isn't Nightcrawler dead?
Okay. Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, he was wearing a cap and he had dreadlocks, and I was like, is that Nightcrawler? And if the splash screen didn't come up and his accent, then I would have never known. So yeah. I really won't comment on that element of the game, but instead I'll concentrate on what I know about. And X-Men Destiny is a pretty bad God of War ripoff. You choose one of three characters, and then you choose a starting ability. And supposedly the hook of the game, or the plot device, is that you can suck up mutant powers. And so I, one of the first abilities...
Like
that,
Kirby?
Yeah, much like Kirby. Yeah, exactly. But it sucks.
Kirby's an X-Men?
Yeah, he's a
Yay!
Mutant.
Did somebody Photoshop that one photo of Wolverine on a Kirby?
Yeah. Give that. Kirby, you know, like Wolverine claws and a little mute.
And that one where he's going, oh!
And button chops. So anyway, I chose ranged attacks for this one guy. His father was a mutant hunter. And so for the first couple hours, you just go from a very tight-knit section to section. It doesn't feel very open at all. You use these ranged attacks, like I said, to knock out, what are they called? Purifiers. They are this anti-mutant group that should have sided with my character, but they attacked me anyway, so I kind of, from there, I went along with the mutants. The combat was really tedious, and it followed Kratos's control scheme, I mean, to a T. There's some dialogue options, but they really didn't seem to matter much besides selecting side missions or kind of moving forward with the story. Killing the enemies themselves, you get rewarded with these magically acquired dots, which you collect, and then you power up, and just like God of War, you hold down a button and you fill up a meter, and that gives you some new attack there. All that's missing are a couple of, you know, blue girls to have sex with in the minigame. So I really can't recommend paying more than, say, $15-$20 for the game. It looks like a DLC title, and it wasn't very fun to play for me.
Yeah, my whole thing that really stuck out to me, and it was the same thing. Do you remember what was it called? Marvel Universe Rise of the Imperfects.
Yes, mm-hmm. For the fighting game.
Yeah, and the character designs really reminded me of that. Where it's like, hey, we're a video company, and we get to make our own characters to put in this comic book world, and we're going to make them look like the most generic-ass video game characters ever. Yeah. Like, oh, we've got this Asian goth girl. Those are popular in video games, right? Oh, we've got this beefy guy in a t-shirt. That's we put those in, like, first-person shooters, right? That'll fit in comic books.
And have, I was you, like, have you talked to Dennis Dyack about that? Because it sounds like you're just reading his brain.
I don't even know what the third character, which is the one I think you picked. I don't even know what he looks like.
He kind of looks like the burly guy.
Oh, really? Like, maybe that's why I don't know what he looks like, because I only...
It's like he was a star high school football player. And
oh, okay, okay, then I'm mixing the two up.
Then he had a freak accident, he got tackled, and his leg was pointing the wrong way, and then his career was over, and then he became an X-Man.
No, his whole thing was like his dad was a mutant hunter, and then he kind of talks to him during the game, like, son, I'm so disappointed with you. He's like, sorry, dad.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is why I never follow the X-Men anymore. It's that, okay, you're part of this big overarching Marvel universe, right?
Uh-huh.
People get their powers all kinds of ways, but if you're born with them, that doesn't necessarily mean you're a mutant. You're only a mutant if you have this mutant gene. Okay. And if you have that gene, then people are totally racist against you. Mm-hmm. But if you got your superpowers any other way, people are like, okay, whatever, go do your thing.
So why wouldn't people just lie and say that they're radioactively exposed and not a mutant?
Exactly, right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't understand why the character... I didn't progress very far before I just turned it off, but I didn't understand why it seemed like the main guy, he had mutant powers, but he could absorb them. Was he a mutant or was he not? It seemed like they just broke the rules for the character.
If it's X-Men, he's a mutant. He has to be. Yeah, yeah. Like it's gotten to the point in the comic book.
Choose their powers.
No, they can't. There's a game mechanic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It's doom. Yeah. Last time I read something with the X-Men, and it was when they kind of had a crossover with the Avengers, and it's like the X-Men are crazy racists now, and they're like, we don't like people who aren't mutants, so take that. And I was like, yep, I'm not really interested in anything you have to say.
Can I admit, as a kid, I was actually more into the Fantastic Four.
No, that's totally cool. Fantastic Four, legit.
I just thought that they were, I don't know, they made it cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's clobbering time. It's trivia time.
Yay!
No, actually, we have an interview first.
Yay!
Well, does Blue want to say anything about what he's played?
Oh, yeah. Oops. I forgot about our dear host.
Actually, I mean, this past week, I've really just been playing some more Persona 3 Portable. I've been able to stick with it better than I have most RPGs, and I think it, like I've said before, it has been because I'm playing on the easier, not the easiest, but the easier difficulty, and I've hardly had to do any grinding whatsoever, and now I'm just free to focus on the daytime social networking or social links or whatever aspect of the game. And I think I'm about 10 hours in, 10 or 11 hours in, and I think I've only got about 30 hours total into Persona 3 Fest on the PS2. And considering I've only had, about 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks, something like that, that's probably a good sign that I'm actually going to stick with it, because things are progressing at a consistent pace. It's not the sort of thing where I have to, where I hit a wall and have to grind. And the rest of it I've already said on the other shows, and I guess the same applies to Burnout Crash as well, which I'm playing for review, which should probably be up by the time the show's up. And honestly, it's been a light gaming week for me, besides, you know, Persona and Burnout Crash. I mean, I did play Burnout 3 to compare the crash modes, and I forgot how quick the runs in the crash mode went by. It's quick. I want to say it's like quick as a hiccup, but it's slightly longer than a hiccup.
Quick as a
hiccup.
Isn't that what I talked about last week? Because I thought that the actual, when you're going into the crash junction, I thought that had a little bit more power.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a little bit more interesting because you couldn't see as far.
Yeah. And, it's like, I was playing this one, I replayed several stages of the crash mode. Mm-hmm. And there was this one junction where you shoot down this long stretch, cut across traffic, then I guess come up like a on-ramp, and you hit this intersection that's right before a bridge. And you have like a 2x multiplier to the right of where you come out. And then you have a crash breaker icon, which if you hit it, you get like an extra crash breaker. And then if you fill your meter up, you get to hit a crash breaker again. And then to the far left, it's kind of difficult to really know exactly where it is because of the way the camera is in Burnout 3, and it's a 4x multiplier. Mm-hmm. If you get the 4x multiplier, then you don't need to get the 2x, because it doesn't multiply your score twice and then multiply that by 4. It's just, if you get the 4, you're good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, with the aftertouch in Burnout 3, it's, you know, it's difficult. It's like, you have like a general idea where like something is, when you're getting ready to make your run, they do like a quick pan over the stage, and you'll see like, okay, there's some traffic coming this way, and then there's a couple items here and a couple items there, and then basically it gives you like a general overview of the crash stage, if you will. It's like the flyover of a hole in a golf game.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
And it's like you'll have a decent idea where they are, but when you are crashing and the crash breaker's going off and your car's just kind of like tumbling, you know, around in midair, even with the like midair bullet time gameplay, you still can get easily confused as to where you are in the stage. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sometimes you'll think, okay, if I aim it just this way, that's probably where it will be. And sometimes you'll be like off by just a hair, and you'll be like, ah, shit, and have to restart the stage again.
Right.
Because when you get up with the stages with the 4x multiplier, if you don't get at least a 2x multiplier or the 4x multiplier,
you'll never get gold.
Exactly. Yeah. And
I always thought they did that as a mechanic so to encourage replay. Because you'd kind of explore the environment and find out, okay, where are... And weren't there other bonus items that would give you an extra, like, 5, 10,000 as well?
There were, gold, silver, and bronze coins.
Yeah, those type of things. And so you'd kind of, you know, keep playing it to find that ideal run.
And that's the thing. It's like, that's what I've noticed about Burnout Crash compared to Burnout 3, is that drive to get every star, get a gold, you know, get every star in the stage, it just isn't there. It's like, but what hooked me about Burnout 3 is just it's quick, but there's all, you know, the runs are quick, and that kind of like lends itself better to one more time.
You want to know what it is that when Burnout's Crash Mode is actually a puzzle game, and you gotta kind of pull apart the puzzle. Whereas Crash, the new one, there's a lot more randomness, and it's dealing with different things that are thrown in your direction.
Yeah, it's like you have to focus on, like, okay, if I use the Crash Breaker, I'm going to send the traffic scattering all across the stage. But if I do that, the intersection I've already had blocked off is going to get opened up again, and that's going to allow more cars to get through.
Right.
And it doesn't. It feels overcomplicated.
If it were a chess game, Burnout 3, you could plan, you know, 3-4 moves in advance, and Burnout Crash, you can only see out one additional move.
And I mean, it's for 800 points, Burnout Crash it's a good game. I mean, I'm not gonna. I've played a lot worse, like our friends at Silicon Knights 2 Human. That was quite terrible, I might add.
Yeah.
But you know. It's not what it should have been. I think while aiming the aftertouch is easier now because of the overhead perspective, it's just lacking that X factor that made the Crash Mode so good.
Yeah,
it's...
Anybody else with us still?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just swimming in Crash Talk.
Before moving on to trivia, we got an interview with Justin from Robot Entertainment. He's going to talk about Orcs Must Die.
Yes, they must.
Hey guys, Desert Eagle here with Robot Entertainment's Justin 6OK Korthoff. So ready to spill some orc blood, sir?
Absolutely. That's awesome. What I do for a living these days.
Awesome. Let the bloodshed begin. So before we talk about a robot's new title, I was wondering if you could give us some insight into the Phoenix-like rebirth of Ensemble, the studio, which was, they were behind one of my favorite RTS franchises, Age of Empires, and also Halo Wars.
Yes. I mean, you kind of gave the story there. Ensemble Studios was around for quite a long time, built the Age franchise, Age of Empires and Age of Mythology. Most recently built Halo Wars, actually, for Microsoft. And then right at the end of Halo Wars, Ensemble was shut down. And coming out of that, several guys went to other studios, a handful built their own little garage studios. But then there were three sort of larger studios that came out of that closure, and Robot was the largest of those three. That was about 35 people, I think, that started Robot, and now we're up to 50. We started Robot in February, opened the doors, I think, for the first time in February of 2009. So we spent the first 2 years developing Age of Empires Online for Microsoft. We did the core game and the first two civs. And then after that was wrapping up, we started moving into doing our own original titles, and that's kind of where Orcs Must Die was born, and now we're entirely focused on doing our own original titles. We've got Orcs launched on Xbox Live Arcade yesterday and on Steam next week, and we've also got two other projects in development that we haven't quite announced yet.
Okay. Now, one question I've had is usually studios are kind of shuttered after they create a game that doesn't meet expectations, but as far as I know, Ensemble's games were universally liked by critics and purchased by consumers. Can you offer any insight into the rationale of the closing?
I really can't. I mean, you'd have to talk to Microsoft, right? It was a business. It's a business decision from their end. And I actually personally worked at Microsoft when the studio was closed.
Sure.
And I've since come down here to work with these guys. But no, I mean, it's business decisions are made every day. You'd have to ask them about it.
Sure. Okay. Now, one of the things you had mentioned that Orcs Must Die is coming out on XBLA this week and next week on Steam. I was wondering if you could share perhaps the premise of the game with us for those that haven't had a chance to check it out.
Yeah, Orcs Must Die, it's an action strategy title. It is sort of the best way to describe it is a mix of tower defense and third-person shooter. You play as this character called the War Mage. He's sort of a very cocky character, if you will.
Sure.
But he's also the last of a group called the Order. They're a group of magic wielders that have been protecting a series of magical rifts that are a portal between two worlds. And there are fortresses built around these rifts to keep a bunch of orcs and various monsters that are on the dark side from getting through the portals into the good side of the world, if you will. And so these fortresses are built, but the fortresses have recently begun falling. And the War Mages that protect them have begun dying. And it falls on your shoulders as the last War Mage to stop the orcs from getting through the remaining rifts and to defend these fortresses. And the way that you have to do that is a large library, a spell book, if you will, of traps and weapons and magical spells that you can use to destroy the orcs in just about any way you can imagine.
Okay. Now, last night I was pushing the orc genocide into the wee hours of the morning, and I felt that Orcs Must Die might have been inspired by a couple of older titles, Tecmo's Deception, or Dungeon Keeper. So, can you confirm the team's affinity for those titles?
You know, honestly, it wasn't either of those. We get those, we get Deception, we get Dungeon Keeper, and we get Trapped, T-R-A-P-T, another old game. But actually, none of those explicitly played in as any sort of influence. In fact, no one here, to my knowledge, had actually even played Deception before we started having people compare us to it.
Really?
I mean, it's a great... I'll take the comparison. Everybody seems to love Deception. So, but no, it wasn't explicitly that. I mean, there were a lot of people. I mean, the core group was about four or five guys that started the game, and they really were sort of looking at, you know, what are we playing right now? And that, you know, it was various games with horde modes in them and defense modes and zombie modes and things like that, various third-person shooters, first-person shooters. And so it was this really an amalgam of kind of everybody who was playing different things, pulling those ideas together. And we started with a few prototypes to test out different ideas, and we finally landed on something that seemed really solid and fun and took it from there.
Now, touching on the mechanics, I was going back last night to earn the additional skulls, kind of powering up the traps, and I was wondering, is it possible to play the game as a straight-up tower defense title, let the contraptions do all the killing? Is that a viable option?
No. I mean, well, we do have... There's an achievement on Steam... I don't know if it's on the Xbox side, but there's an achievement on Steam that if you beat one of the Act 2 or 3 levels using only traps, you do get an achievement for it. So I shouldn't say it's impossible. In the early levels in the game, too, you could probably get away with it, but we spent a lot of time balancing the game so that you do have to use both combat and traps, and we've got a couple guys who explicitly tested that, you know, over and over and over. They would try beating a level with just one type of trap or just combat stuff or just traps. And generally speaking, you know, we prefer that you don't, you know, that that's not possible. To our design director says that's a failure for us if you can do it either way. So we did a lot of balance work to make sure that you kind of have to do both. You set up a lot of traps, but you're going to have to pick off guys on your own with your combat stuff.
Now, speaking of the design, one of the things I've noticed so far with Orcs is there seems to be kind of a preferred way to clear a level, meaning stages have areas where you can usually take advantage of a newly acquired device. Now, did you guys, how did you guys kind of balance this slightly puzzle-like mechanic?
a significant amount of iteration. We've got one guy here, one of our designers, who just really, really, really enjoys that kind of stuff. He loves the spreadsheets, you know, and digging around in the numbers and min-maxing things. And so he sort of handled a lot of the balance on stuff. But we would constantly, we play test every day in the studio, the actual people developing the game, you know. So it's not like we farm out all of our QA or anything like that. We have daily play test sessions. And so everyone gets to play the game all the time. And there's constantly feedback coming in every single day about this works or that works or it doesn't work or this feels too powerful or, you know, I'm a god when I have this weapon or whatever. So that it affords us the opportunity to be constantly changing, and we do change constantly. There's, you know, we're not afraid to push some dials up and down and see how things play out differently, and just doing that over and over and over for the better part of a year got us to a really comfortable place with balance.
Cool. Now, I think part of the game's charm, at least for me, is the pleasure in seeing the traps kind of sprung on unsuspecting orcs. But some of the enemies, they seem to have a little bit of savviness about them, and they can evade these ensnarlments. Now, can you offer us a peek into the muddy mind of an orc? How did you guys kind of balance the pattern following with a little bit of unpredictability?
Actually, it's entirely unpredictable. I don't know if you're hearing that. That was my email sound. Sorry. They don't dynamically avoid traps intelligently anyway. You know, they don't choose to. There are enemies like the hunter who can do things like leap over barricades, and I guess you can call that trap avoidance in a certain way. But generally speaking, there is an actual story reason why most of the orcs just kind of barrel down the hallway and you know, don't go, wait a minute, maybe I should just stop right here. There's a story reason for that. So they do that. But what we've done is provided them as wide a berth as we can. So we lay out, you know, within the hallways, basically, here's the pathable area. And then they just sort of find their own pathways down that. And they'll meander a little bit and go around, go to the edges of hallways and run straight down the edge and things like that. But it's not actual dynamic intelligent trap avoidance. It still puts you in a position of having to really kind of eyeball where the orcs are going to be and spread your traps out accordingly to accommodate the horde that's coming in.
Because I did like the AI in the game there. Now, personally, do you have a favorite trap in the game?
You know what? It varies. I usually have an answer for that question, but I'm always like, right now I'm really loving the grinder trap, which is these two big metal cylinders in the wall with spikes on them, and they spin and they suck orcs in and grind them up. I'm a big fan of a lot of the basically metal mechanical ones. I'm a big fan of the blade trap with the big spinning blades that come out of the wall.
Sure.
The physics traps are really fun, like the spring trap. If you can, you know, get a few of those going, you can fling guys into the air and let archers shoot them out of the air and stuff like that. I do like the guardians a lot, both the archers and the paladins. So it really just, I mean, I'm on probably about my 12th playthrough of the game right now. And every time my tastes kind of change and I try different traps, and then suddenly that's my new favorite trap for a while.
Very cool. Now, and one of my favorite traps is just pretty simple. You know, the walls lined with arrows that are ready to miss the orcs that walk by. And
Indiana Jones style.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the punishment, it seems extra severe when there's two kind of corresponding traps on each side, and maybe a set of spikes on the floor. Do players get a bonus for overlapping ambushes?
Yeah, you do, actually. Okay. We start counting combos as, you know, you're using more traps to kill enemies, and any combos that are three or more, we give you combos points for. You get extra points and you get extra money for those kills. So you'll see the combo counter pop up on screen with combo times four or combo times five. Obviously, three is the most frequent one, but they do go pretty high. We had in one of our interviews we did earlier this year, one of our producers mentioned a 9 combo, and we got back to the office and realized, I don't think we've ever actually had a 9 combo. And so the guy I was telling you about earlier, Tim, our designer who does all the balance stuff, he went to work on it and to see if we could actually do that, and he actually managed to get it. You have to do it on an ogre who has a lot more hit points, but he did actually manage a 9 trap combo. So it's a pretty broad set, and all of that adds to your points, and when you're trying to beat your friends on the leaderboards and stuff, that gets to be a very compelling thing to find the best way to combo up traps.
Yeah, certainly. And before we go, I'd like to know what's up next for Robot. Can we expect you to remain in the downloadable marketplace?
If it makes sense for us, yes. I mean, the big thing here is that we want to make fun games, and we don't want to be the company that makes just mobile games, or the company that makes just XBLA games, or the company that makes just PC games. You know, we don't want to be that company, or any even, you know, genre. We don't want to be the company that makes only RTS games, or whatever it is. So really, it's just going to be what's the idea, and if the idea is fun, and it's an arcade or download sized game, then that's where it will end up. We're not going to try and force the games to fit something they're not. We're going to do it the other way around.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Justin.
Thank you very much.
Wasn't that a great interview, guys?
It's fantastic.
It was. Hey, guys. I think it's time to for a contest. What do you think?
I'd say so.
Okay.
Although I think we should progress through the rest of the show quickly because I feel like Sean and I might be a little fady.
Fady? Is that a word? Okay.
Fady.
Guys, we're giving away one copy FIFA 12, one copy NHL 12 for the Xbox 360, and a t-shirt from 604 Republic. Okay. So here's what you got to do. You got to follow 604republic.com. They can be found at Twitter by 604republic. And then, I don't know, what should we do? How about you post your favorite 604republic t-shirt design by name?
No, that's too generic. I like blues.
No, but I like that it incorporates these poor guys that are giving us free stuff.
Fine.
And they have a t-shirt. Here's my favorite, where Socrates is fighting Plato.
I saw that one, too. I like that.
Yeah.
I have not seen that one, but I feel like I would like that.
But they're not, they're not in a cave.
They're not in a cave. Dude, they could have fought everywhere. They were in the Republic at one point. They were on top of a mountain at one point. They could have fought anywhere.
Okay. Never mind. I won't explain that.
I know what the cave is, dude.
Okay.
It's an allegory.
It is an allegory.
And speaking of alligators, let's move on to trivia. You guys ready?
Yay. Nope. Yes.
Yay, trivia.
Okay, number one, with the release of NBA Jam on Fire Edition, the 18-year-old franchise shows that even a lockout can't stop things from heating up. Over the nearly two-decade span, which political figure hasn't appeared in the game? A, high-flying Hillary Clinton. B, boom-shaka-boomin' Barbara Bush. C, downtown Dick Cheney. Or D, Sarah Layup Nailin Palin.
I think it was Dick Cheney.
Isn't that like the equivalent of E, put it in?
Gross.
Yeah, you're there.
Hillary Clinton.
Okay. We got Hillary Clinton. Sean, I didn't hear you.
I think Dick Cheney has not been in it.
I heard he's a pretty lousy shot, but I'm bump.
But I'm
gross.
For some reason, I'm going to go with Barbara Bush.
And the correct answer goes to Blue Swim.
I knew it! Why didn't I say that?
Shaka Boom and Barbara Bush.
Damn it, I knew it.
She should be in the game. Speaking of hoops, which nickname was given to the trio of Chrono Trigger's developers? Sakaguchi, Hori, and Toriyama, whose work was made available for PS3 and PSP owners this week. Is it A, the Dream Team, B, the Mavericks, C, the Big Three, D, the Road Warriors, or E, the Redeem Team?
I like the Redeem Road Warriors.
I like the Redeem Team, too. I think it's probably going to be B, though.
Road Warriors.
What'd you say? Road Warriors?
Yeah.
Correct answer. You guys are all wrong. A, Dream Team.
Boo.
Wow, wow, wow. Number three, jumping back to 1995, may help you with this question. What was the name of the time machine used in Chrono Trigger? Is it A, Quantum Leap, B, Wings of Time, C, Chronos X, or D, the Vestibule of Time?
D.
Not the testicle. Vestibule.
The testicle of time?
Yes.
I'm going to go with B, as in boy.
What were they again?
Goes with the boy. Quantum Leap, Wings of Time, Chronos X, the Vestibule of Time.
I thought it was Epoch something.
It's a nickname.
It's
official name.
You're asking for the nickname or for the official name?
Official.
Oh.
We're official on this podcast.
We are never official ever in anything we do.
I officially loathe Angry Birds.
Oh my god, I'm going to smack you the next time I see you.
And I will officially dodge and strike back.
With an angry bird?
Yes, please answer the question. You guys should have went with Sean on this one. Wings of Time. The Nola knows. Chrono Trigger. Number four, this week's release, Emotion Explosion. Sounds more like a seizure than an enjoyable Kinect game, which completely fictionalized minigame won't cause fits with gamers. A, sack hack. B, dodge brawl. C, balance board. Or D, slap the snake. You guys ever play Slap the Snake?
Gross, man.
I'm going to go with balance board.
A.
Okay. You're going with A, sack hack?
I guess I'll go with A.
Sage, I didn't hear.
I said A.
A. Correct answer, D, slap the snake.
Damn it.
Damn.
Slaps all around. This week's release of Sega Bass Fishing was lucky enough to make it into Sega's all-star lineup, prompting almost every publisher to come out with their own Player's Choice, Platinum, and Greatest Hits line of budget games. So which of these Dreamcast delectables never had the same honor? A, Power Stone 2. B, Virtua Tennis. C, NFL Blitz 2000. Or D, The House of the Dead 2.
Power Stone 2.
I'm going to agree, Power Stone 2.
I agree.
Wow. You guys just went with Sean because he jumped on it. Correct answer, Power Stone 2.
Excuse me, I love the original Power Stone. I love it. It's part of why I have a Dreamcast.
And Power Stone
I bought the Power Stone collection on the PSP. That was one of the first games I bought for it.
There you go.
You guys are just trying to outdo each other on Power Stone.
Power Stone! Power Stone! Dreamcast! Power Stone! I win!
I have a Power Stone tattoo on my butt.
I have Which one under my tongue.
Which character is it?
It's the aviator-looking guy.
With the red jumpsuit?
You know what? It's been a long time since I had to care about Power Stone. When I was 16, drunk, tattoo in parlor, Dreamcast magazine.
Didn't you get the samurai swordsman, Sean? I'm so disappointed in you.
You know what? I was trying to get Phantasy Star Online tattoo. I think I said page 70 when I meant page 80. And it was Power Stone article, so...
You should have got the word Sonic, and you wouldn't have to spell out the O. Okay, so Blue, you got a bonus question for us.
Yes, indeedy.
Let's hear it.
Okay, and it's actually one that's quite simple. All you have to do is tell me who is the DJ in Burnout 3.
Oh, I know this.
Is it A, DJ Titan?
No.
B, Striker?
Yes.
C, Scorch? Or D, Tire Iron Eddie?
I'm going to bet the house on Striker.
Well, gee, now I'm kind of thinking it's Striker.
Yeah, I feel like it must be Striker.
K-Rock.
Yeah, it's Striker.
I didn't show off my knowledge of Burnout with that one.
Bam!
Bam. Who knows trivia? Okay, so we got some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Should we offer hate grenades?
Hate grenades!
Yay!
Incoming from Hate Grenade. I noticed the Deagle tweeted about Kotaku posting Batman Arkham City spoilers. Thanks for the warning, but I got it too late. Sorry, Hate Grenade. This weekend, the site posted, which is actually the last weekend by the time you heard it, a misleading article saying Rage was going to be delayed. It's not. A PS3 kiosk with the Gears of War ads on it. An article, I kid you not, titled An Advanced Class on How to Be a Giant Dickbag in Halo Reach.
Douchebag.
No, dickbag. In a 3DS video showing the system running a pirated game. Next episode, I'd like your thoughts. Not really a question, but commentary is encouraged.
Yeah, I think we've given plenty of thoughts on Joystick at this point. I mean, they do what they do for hits, and it's...
See, I...
Yeah, sorry, not Joystick. That was a poor slip. I'm sorry.
But there's a difference between plugging certain things for hits and then just being grossly negligent in your journalism and reporting things incorrectly. Like saying that, you know, a game's not coming out, it's delayed, or saying that, you know, I mean, them talking about how to be a D-bag in Halo is just that they're lame and they don't have anything good to talk about, but actually giving incorrect information is, like, really sad journalism.
Yeah. But it's not journalism. I mean, they're definitely not considering it journalism. They're making money posting things. Integrity is not what's important to them.
Maybe, I mean, tabloid journalism?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is video game tabloids. How often is TMZ wrong? National Enquirer. It doesn't matter, because by the time they're proved wrong, they've moved on to something else.
Right. And I don't see a problem with a lot of people don't like Kotaku saying, oh, you're not exactly talking about games. You're talking about the space surrounding that, say, with the PS3 kiosk and things like that. That's fine. You know, it is, you know, remotely associated with games, and if that's what they want to do, that's cool. But I guess the stickler was the 3DS video. I didn't actually see it showing running a pirated game. I've seen articles before that are kind of wink-wink how-to. And that's a little bothersome. I know that that information is out there, but I don't know. You know, when you get to be a certain size, run it with a little bit of, you know, credibility.
There's certain things that just don't need to be promoted anymore, and I think piracy is one of them.
Yep. Yeah, enough of that out there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to say, like, Halo 3 got pirated early, yada, 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 but it's... I mean, it's because that is news oriented. That is gaming news oriented. Mm-hmm.
Like, but then I even wonder, like, how much of that is, hey, go look for it, you know, now that it's out. You know, I understand it's news, but sometimes when it's written, you know, they give you everything but the link for it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's kind of like a green light to go to BitTorrent or some shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So that's that. I had a question. Was I too busy playing soccer games this week that I missed Sony's PS2 Classics announcement? I had long been rumored that PS2 games were coming on PS3, PSN.
Yeah, it was a pretty guerrilla announcement. It was like, hey, it's going to be PS2 games on PSN tomorrow. Go for it.
Wasn't this bigger?
I mean,
you know... Well,
I think they're going to wait until there's a first-party Sony game they care about. They're going to, you know, because technically those games are all still being published by their original publishers. So NIS sent out a press release about Grim Grimoire. I think Konami sent out a press release about Ring of Red. But Sony just kind of said, hey, we're putting these out tomorrow. Update in the store. Check that every 2K anyway.
And Grim Grimoire is $10, and I'd encourage people to check it out. Ring of Red I haven't played in a while, but I'll probably buy that.
I want to play Ring of Red because it looked like Front Mission, and I love Front Mission, but I was watching somebody play it on YouTube.
Remember, it was a really early PS2 game.
Yeah, and the battle system looks kind of weird, and it looks a little too wordy for its own good, but I still want to try it.
I played it when it originally came out, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but I don't know. I thought $10 would be a nice... Yeah. Nice. $10
is the right price for them. And I think this is also, I think the other reason Sony hasn't said anything about it until right up before it is I think that they had planned on announcing that the Vita was PlayStation 2 compatible at this point, but they haven't gotten around to it.
That would be awesome.
I think what's going to end up happening is it's not going to be PS2 compatible at launch, but by the time it makes its US launch, it will be.
Fire Pro Wrestling returns on Vita equals sold.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Jeremy Lamont, one of our favorite listeners, he asks, why do game writers constantly... Oh, no, wait. That's another question. That's Blue.
No, that was him?
No,
Blue added something at the end.
Okay. So, Jeremy asks, somebody's messing with the outline. Does games writing discourage the type of long careers one might find in sports, political, or other forms of journalism?
Yes and no. I don't think that the writing necessarily does. It's just that there's not a precedent for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird what you picked, though, here. Sports, political, and other kinds of journalism.
Yeah.
Sports journalism, the people who get really big at it, that's their retirement plan after they actually play the sports.
Mm-hmm.
And... video game journalism is kind of the opposite. A lot of people are in video game journalism trying to break into the industry, not kind of retiring themselves. It would be really interesting to have sort of a network of games journalism that is just former, you know, game industry folks. But I think that there's still some evolution that needs to happen with the industry before you can say that things that happened when I was doing this are the same that are happening today.
And I don't think it's quite old enough, because sports has been around a lot longer in a professional and observable capacity than gaming has been.
And I still think we're searching for our Pauline Kael, our Roger Ebert, our, you know, whoever you want to say within film criticism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that person has established themselves yet.
Do you think it's even possible for somebody to establish themselves?
Nope.
As like an Ebert or a Roper?
Nope.
Yeah, I believe not.
I do not think so. I do not think that we'll ever have a critic that is as well known as a Roger Ebert ever again.
Oh, well known around that same level. I think N. Guy Kroll writes some really interesting stuff.
Or has he really written anything? Yeah, he's lately. A consultant now. I mean, that's exactly this guy's question. Yeah. N. Guy Kroll, he was like the best. And you know what he did? He went and became a consultant.
N. Guy comes back.
You also hear a lot of IGN reviewers and editors and stuff like that dropping off to go to game companies.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's most of the people that are in the journalism side of this aren't doing it because they really want to be journalists. I mean, Greg Miller is the only one I can think of. He went and got a journalism review specifically to become a games journalist. Everybody else, it's like, really want to be into video games. So I went to college and I majored in history because I really hate school. And then I got out of college and was like, shit, how am I going to roll this into video games? Journalism. Like, what's the name of the guy who used to write for 1UP and now he works for the Halo studio? His whole story was
Luke Smith.
Is it Luke Smith? Yeah, he was working at a prison guard as a prison guard, and you know, then he just one day went out to California and decided that he was going to be a video game writer. Like, he had been posting on 1UP long enough that he decided he was going to try and turn that into a career. You know, like, and now he's working in the industry. That's the dream that people in doing this have.
I mean, I like both sides, though.
I'd rather transition to a prison guard.
less shit to deal with that way.
Yeah.
But no, I think that I don't disagree with you, Sean. I do agree with you. Personally, I like the journalism aspect, and I think that it's more, if you're not a company that has sacrificed your integrity for money, it's more of an objective, broad view of sort of the gaming industry than if you're in one of the companies, because I think if you actually get into working for a video game company, then your view becomes much more narrow.
Everybody drops the journalism side as soon as they get a real job. But what I'm saying, the difficulty is, and you're kind of touching on this but getting a little bit ahead of yourself, is that if your end goal is to work for one of these companies, do you sacrifice your ethics in order to get closer to those companies? Like, if you really, really wanted to work for Sony, do you kiss their ass so that it looks better when you go into an interview there?
I wouldn't, but yes, I agree that people do that and that it happens as part of the routine of getting in.
Yeah.
There are some overlappers, Sean. There's some people that that work in PR and also write within the industry.
And I don't think that's necessarily correct. Unless it's sort of like, so full disclosure, guys,
that's correct factually?
No, I think it's ethically. Factually.
Okay.
And full disclosure, guys, I actually went on an interview with this company who makes Facebook games. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I talked to you about. And it was one of those things that if I was going to do a job in the game industry, it would either be leaving tech gaming or working in a sort of field like Facebook games that I know is never going to get in the way of this. But no, obviously it's something that happens. I'm not debating that. I mean, Tidegear, you know, he worked for Rock and Android while he was writing for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. And some of that is just that it's a dog-eat-dog economy and you need two jobs.
Yeah, but the other side of that question was he also asked why I lost it. Oh yeah, why do games writers constantly bitch about other game writers? It doesn't seem to be a problem with other press start over. Why do other game writers constantly bitch about other game writers? It doesn't seem to be a problem in other press sectors. I don't think that's necessarily true, because the only reason Fox News exists is because they want to bitch about CNN, and now it's vice versa as well. That's all they do anymore is bitch about each other.
And lots of press bash about each other, like, covertly. Like, they'll write an article and then sort of stealthily mention that their peers in the field have gotten things wrong and are fucking things up.
Yeah. Or the concept of the liberal media is that exact thing. We don't have a word for the video game review groups that we don't agree with. But if we had it, it would be the same as, you know, when you hear someone say, oh, the liberal media says this.
It's the same thing. And I think it's also because sometimes you get groups that don't behave with integrity, and other people in the field feel like that makes the reputation of the field as a whole go down. So I think part of it's competition, and part of it is not agreeing with the methods of other companies because you feel like it's going to put a bad light on you as well.
I think it also mirrors politics, and it mirrors the marketing campaigns, because there is a certain amount, you know, within the marketing that is encouraged. You know, these kind of fanboy flame wars are encouraged by marketing companies.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And that runs throughout discussions, that runs throughout forums. That's just the general mentality of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Battlefield 3 and Call of Duty 3, their whole back and forth. To me, slightly embarrassing.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, the other thing I was going to say, too, is that this is it's a journalism type that's specifically focused towards a group that is getting their news by the minute. And there is not enough news in the day on this one specific topic to satiate that set. And so what do you report about when there's nothing left to report about? You report about the reporting.
Yeah. Meta. Mm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But, so that's that. I think it's time to wrap up the show.
Woo!
Alrighty.
Host, give us an outro.
Good show.
All right. If you would like... a second.
I would like a second.
I leaned back in my chair and I couldn't read it.
If you would like to complement your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest you check out tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. If you'd like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is @tech_gaming on Twitter. Sean Nola Kirkland is Sean Nola, 2 N's, on Twitter. Sage Samurage Morris Green is @Samurage. And you can find me, Whiny Pin Beetle, Dynamut, @ Blue Swim, all one word.
Dynamut kind of works, because Dynamut was Blue Falcon's sidekick, so it'd still go with the whole blue thing.
Sailor Moon Fandango. Sailor Moony Fandango. My name is changing as we record.
I don't know how I feel about Sailor Moon Fandango. That's a little out there.
Yeah. Anyway, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, do subscribe to us.
New link, new art, same old poop jokes.